Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast today. I hope you enjoy it. But first, I want to ask you a question. Are you someone who has high upside potential in your business, and yet sometimes that goal is just hard to get to, and maybe the only way you've seen to get to it is just to make more calls, you know, work harder? Well, if you're fed up with using old strategies to solve new problems, then I might have a solution. It's my 5-day Million Dollar Seller Challenge. We meet 1 hour a day in a coaching intensive where I will teach you 5 moves that you can make to scale your results without working harder. To learn more, click the link in the show notes or go to milliondollarsellerchallenge.com. Welcome back to the Bill Caskey Podcast. Today we have a special guest with us, Dacia Coffey. She wrote a book called Corporate Caffeine. And obviously the caffeine referencing her name, Coffey, even though it's not spelled like coffee. We have a really interesting conversation. And, you know, I don't take on too many guests on this podcast. And her email came through from, I don't know if it's her PR company or her one of her people, but it was very well done. And most of them are not. Most PR companies, when they try to get one of their people on a podcast like mine, they go off into tangents and smoke, and Dacia's was really clever and is really well done. And so actually she's a listener as well. We decided to have her on. Here's the interview that we did with Dacia Coffey, author of Corporate Caffeine. So welcome to the show, to Dacia Coffey. She has a podcast, which she'll tell you about. She also has a book that she came out with recently called Corporate Caffeine, Boosting B2B Growth Through Sales and Marketing Alignment. Dacia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. I am thrilled to be here. I am a fan, so this is exciting.
Oh, wow. Well, you're in New Orleans getting ready to celebrate a wedding, so hopefully we can hold you for like 20 or 30 minutes before you go onto the turf.
I will try not to go long. I am so passionate about this that, oh my goodness, this is my happy place, so you're good.
Oh, good. Well, you know, I always tell people, I don't always tell them, if it's true, I tell them that a lot of what's in the book are things that we preach and teach in our consulting and coaching business. And that's why I wanted to have you, because A, people need to hear it from another person. B, you have a depth of this sales and marketing alignment thing that I don't have. So it's going to be really educational for me too. Give me the premise, and then we'll get into your little bit of your background, but give me the premise of the case that you're making in the book, just in a sentence or a minute or so.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two big points. I mean, number one, marketing and sales, effective, powerful marketing and sales outcomes can be driven through a servant leadership perspective. So weirdly, the more advanced and technologically savvy and all of the fancy things that are happening in the business world, the more new school we get, the more critical it is to return to old school fundamental humanity. And that humanity will make you wildly effective. It's that paradigm shift is huge. But then the second part is that business to business, no shock to your audience, is complicated. I mean, the sales cycles are getting even longer, even more complicated. And the number one way we lose business is to no decision, which is absolutely criminal to both the seller as well as the buyer, because it means they decided to live with that really cumbersome problem. And they have loads of sunk cost and time and attention, and they're still in the most horrific place that they were when they started the buying process. And it's inexcusable. I mean, it kills prosperity on both sides and it kills joy. And so really making sure that you bring some structure through marketing and sales alignment to make sure that those buyers are going the distance and are getting their problem solved is critical. And you can do it. It can be scaled and it can be documented and it can be trained and it can accelerate your growth, but you've got to return to fundamentals.
And I love that, because there is kind of a loss of humanity, I think, when we allow tech to kind of take over. I'm not talking about video. I'm talking about follow-up technology, CRMs. CRMs are the bane sometimes of my existence.
Yes.
I don't consult with them, but whenever I hear somebody say, "Oh, we've got a CRM," I always feel like, yeah, but that's, you know, you sell to 20 people a year. How much of a CRM? You could have postcards, you know, index cards and do the same thing, but we get married to that tech and we become very proud of it, and rightfully so, because it does serve a purpose. Well, you said a couple things in here that I thought were particularly interesting right off the bat. I'd like to read a couple of things here. You said that your communication is a signal of what matters most to you. Owning your communication, simply gaining awareness of your communication, can send off a positive cascade of change in your life and in your business. Tell us what you mean by that.
So I'm a big believer that people tell on themselves. I mean, you do not have to be this intense psychologist to be able to read what's actually happening inside of people's minds and hearts. And especially in a selling environment, this is so incredibly true because there's goals, you know, I mean, this is about your personal prosperity and, you know, hitting your bonuses and, you know, hitting your number, that type of thing. Same thing on marketing. And so we have a tendency to use language that communicates either the stress or the optimism or the confidence or the belief in your product and offering that you actually have. And so getting clear around where are you as an individual and how do you really think and feel about what you're representing? And then being intentional about what you really, you know, converting that into what's in it for me and converting that into what's in it for the person that I am guiding through the buying process is pivotal. And our communication leads that. So the words that we use, if they're very oriented towards value, and value is defined by the customer, not by the salesperson, not by the company, not by a marketer, by the customer. If you're really, really advocating for the customer, which is what sales is supposed to do, and it's what marketing is supposed to tee up, then your words immediately instill confidence in the person receiving that because they know you've got their best interest at heart. But we can get lost, you know, by overselling or over explaining or over talking or, you know, I mean, or sinking into our sales and marketing training versus just showing up to be good to somebody and trusting that our subject matter expertise is going to guide them on a powerful path of progress. And so that's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
And, you know, be intentional.
Yeah, I think, you know, my spin on that is that at the end of the day, saying that I hate, but I tend to use a lot for some reason, is, you know, we've just got to keep the customer okay all the way through the process.
Yeah.
And that sounds like, so it's like, oh, what is that? Some kind of pop psych. But everybody is striving, especially over the last few years. And I think the ground is still shaking about what we've been through. I think people just want to feel okay in your presence. And so if you show up and you're a little bit too steamrolly, a little bit too bullying, not using the right language, as you say, having the wrong intention, I think people get not okay. And when they get not okay, I'm talking about prospects or customers, they lie to you and they take you down paths you don't want to go down. So sometimes I think I do a group coaching for some people and we always are dissecting deals. And I always ask the question, did you make them feel, what did you do or say to make them feel okay during the process? And a lot of times it escapes our mind. It just, we lose that part of it. And that's part of intentionality, I think.
I cannot agree more. I mean, I'll give you two examples. Buyer's remorse happens before the invoice is issued, before the deal is closed. It happens before. And so people get very nervous about all of the things that can happen right before the close of a sale. That's why we lose so many deals to no decision. But a salesperson's getting excited because they're about to hit their number. They're about to close the deal. This is fun. That is dangerous dissonance. Like, not acceptable. And on the opposite side, you know, early in the prospecting, lots of salespeople hate the hunting aspect of it. And so they feel insecure. They hate voicemails. They hate cold calling. They hate that introductory, you know, qualification meeting. But you know what? The buyer's kind of excited because they've decided, I'm going to go figure out how to solve this problem once and for all, and I'm done. And so again, a salesperson can really derail themselves. And this is where marketing can fortify that. But they can derail themselves on accident because it's a part that makes them uncomfortable. But the buyer's excited. They're not frustrated or bothered by you. You represent progress, but you have to allow yourself to.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you probably talk to a lot of sales professionals, as do I, and nobody thinks, I shouldn't say that, a high percentage of sales professionals think they're really, really good at selling. And And a lot of them are in the old method, in the old way. But the problem is that the world has changed. And you talk about, you know, you obviously it's an up-to-date book because you're talking about the pandemic and talking about, you know, less in-person time with prospects. And I think it's important that salespeople recognize that and are self-aware. You even talk about that, just total self-awareness of, are you casting a shadow or are you casting a light? Are you helping them get where they want to go or are you trying to sell something to them?
Well said. I love it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
In your book, you talk about sales and marketing alignment. And I know that we have been talking about that for decades, years, if not decades, and it still is rare. Why do you think that is?
So I'm going to answer that from a couple of different points of view. The first one is that marketers have not been taught to speak the language of business. And this is a real soapbox for me. What I mean by that is the language of business is finance and it's also sales, right? So it is P&L accountability. But when you're in marketer's land, the language, the semantics are followers and impressions and conversions. And a CFO or an executive vice president of sales or CEO is going, I have no idea what that means. How does it help me sell more? And so it's inappropriate. So two different things happen. Number one, a marketer has not been given the business tools of language to communicate to the people making decisions how they're actually effective. And they are. I mean, like when they're talking impressions and conversions, that is critical fundamental sales pipeline activity. However, it's not translating. And so then C-suite decides to take control and go, okay, we are going to do stuff that works and that I understand. And so they start pushing initiatives or ideas or requests down, trying to make sure it works, and it's unraveling the work of marketing because marketing is proactive. Sales is reactive out of, you know, you have to react to the person right in front of you. You have to be of service to them. And so that can create a lot of problems. And a lot of companies accidentally turn marketing into a sales admin role where actually they should be unburdening sales from the prospecting and managing the consensus building that's critical and all of the research that's now happening digitally and through referrals and through wide range of complicated touch points. Marketing should be responsible for that early stage research portion that is a time killer for salespeople. But I think that's really one huge reason why that's happening, why that misalignment's showing up in organizations.
Yeah, I think, and I'd like to ask you in a second here, what if I'm a VP of sales listening to this and I see this inside my company, what can I do? But I also think before I ask that, it seems to me like in a complex sales process, let's say complex, meaning there's several prospects, several people at the client company involved. There's time, there's data analysis. You know, it's not a one call close. It's a 90 to 120 day or longer. I feel like marketing's job is not done when the lead comes in. Marketing's job really just starts because that's when they have to team up with the sales squad and say, okay, what does this prospect need as we go down this journey of the sales process? Do they need a video? Do they need a white paper? And I think salespeople feel like, well, once the lead's in, it's all up to me, man. It's the yoke is on my, and that's just, and it puts a burden on the sales team when it really, there's plenty of assets available to help you close the sale, but we don't use them because they're probably not readily identifiable or available.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a couple examples inside of that. Marketers are typically better writers than sales because they've been trained to be. So guess who should be writing, predictively writing sales follow-up emails? It should be the marketing team. And they should be loaded into the CRM or into, you know, some sort of tool, you know, in a salesperson's Gmail where they can grab things and then customize that message. But that can be incredibly powerful. There are so many interesting things. But like you said, a video that a salesperson can, you know, can send, structuring collateral or audits or intake forms or polishing and professionalizing the prospect experience so that a salesperson is in the best light, because when they send them something, it's amazing. And that prospect thinks, oh, wow, I wish we were this good.
Exactly. You know, or I've made the right, I've concluded I've made the right decision here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's so true. I have a friend of mine, Steve Walker, is Walker Information, and they do customer experience. And he has a podcast called the CX Podcast. And of course, everybody's talking CX. And I feel like, yeah, it's important, but what about PX? What about prospect experience? That's a huge part too.
Yes.
And nobody's really talking about that other than people like you and I, but we haven't given it a name. So therefore, it doesn't take on a life of its own like customer experience does.
I love this. And I think it's dangerous not to, because those are the seeds that blossom into customer experience. I mean, you are setting expectation. And for the environments that you just described, these complex environments, we are talking change management for lots of companies when they finally make a purchase. And so all of the expectations, all of the experience that informed their choice of partner, you better make good on those promises. And by the way, that means you have to know what they were. And you have to know what that customer experienced as a prospect, because a lot of problems, a lot of friction can arise when the other side, the operational side of an organization, feels and looks very different than the marketing and the sales piece. And so that's really, really critical too in regards to that alignment, because wow, you're talking about long-term customer churn or reducing that, you know, and customer delight and turning customers into evangelists that then fill your pipeline because you guys were so outstanding.
Right.
So I applaud that prospect experience idea of driving that, Bill. I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah. So let's close this this episode up. Let's stop the tape and then let's continue. The next episode, I'd like to spend a little bit more time on the sales models, because you talk about how the sales models of traditional sales models are kind of obsolete, which I totally agree with. But let's say I'm a VP of sales or I'm in a management position. I'm listening to this and I see that my sales and marketing really aren't aligned at all. What are one or two things they can do after listening to this to start to remedy that?
Get in the same room for a couple of sessions to create decision-making criteria. And what this does is it will validate or show you the areas where you are in agreement or disagreement. So as an example, buyer personas are specific psychographic insights around your ideal customer, right? Very, very common for different people in different places in the organization to have different assumptions about them. And a buyer persona is not an industry, it's a human being. So that's really important, because a buyer persona is decision-making criteria top to bottom. It is what you spend time, attention, and money on. And so a 90-minute session with senior leadership, marketing, sales, and your best client-facing people, maybe a project manager, maybe a customer service person, to talk about the humanity behind your best people, it is a game changer. Salespeople will literally make different decisions almost immediately, and the marketing team will too. And so then you've got language when making decisions on what to spend, because you can say, does this serve that person? And everybody knows. And then there's a couple others, you know, doing a session around sales mapping where you, and I outline this in the book, so I won't go into detail here, but where you literally whiteboard what happens in the sales process. And then marketing gets to hear and gets to say, well, you could use this marketing tool.
You could use that,
you know, and you really start to go, where's marketing in that process? Where's sales in that process? And what you're actually building is you're building the customer journey and you're building the prospect experience, and you're literally visualizing it for the whole team. And you can see, wow, we don't have enough tools in certain places, or that makes so much sense why we're losing people at a certain place in the sales cycle, is because we're not fortifying that enough. And so that piece, and then also, so I know it's a little bit of a long answer, but the final part is around messaging. Messaging is not one brilliant value proposition. It's not one sentence that is a game changer.
No.
It is a timeline where your message serves a person that is researching this their problem for the first time. And then later, your messaging evolves, because they are understanding their solutions. And so then marketing and sales can both speak to vendor selection, change management, preparation, that type of thing. And then when a person does finally decide on their final partner, they're much more educated. And so that language, again, it changes. So messaging needs to be drawn out. Your brand message, your brand promise, your value proposition, whatever semantics you use right. inside your organization, it actually needs to be mapped alongside of what a buyer understands and how they receive information, because that's critical. It's not just saying the right thing, it's saying it at the right time. And you can do that in person after doing that by really thinking, what do people need to understand in order for them to continue to make progress on their decision? Because that's really what it's about. It's not about picking you. It's about them making progress on a solution to a significant problem they're facing.
Yeah, I like that idea of sitting in the same room, talking about the buyer avatar, and not just you know, how old are they and what are their preferences, but what are their problems? What are they looking to you to fix? What's the transformation that you're promising? If they decide to go with you and they say, okay, I'm in, how do we get transformation? Most people don't really have a sense of what the transformation is.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot. I say, well, what do you mean transform? Well, how are you going to change their life if you get engaged with them? Because you will change it. So you might as well know how you're going to do it, because that could be part of messaging. We're talking today with Dacia Coffey. She is the CEO of The Marketing Blender. She's written a book called Corporate Caffeine. Dacia, we'll do another episode here, but how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more?
Well, you can find the book Corporate Caffeine on all of the standard places, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble. Just Google it. Also, we've got a podcast by the same name, so Corporate Caffeine. Or if you're looking for support, you guys can learn a little bit about what we do at themarketingblender.com.
Awesome. Thanks for being with me today. Let's pick this up and do episode 2. Thanks for being here, Dacia.
Sounds amazing. Thanks, Bill.